robber barons of the past. But first, on Friday, the federal government introduced new anti-terrorism legislation that critics argue gives Canada's spy agency sweeping powers that threaten our civil liberties. Joining us to talk about the implications of this new legislation is Victoria criminal lawyer Paul Pearson. Paul, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Paul, can you give us, our listeners, some rundown of exactly what this legislation does?
Yeah, certainly. And I'll actually go back a little bit in history because although this is new legislation, we've actually had fairly robust and fulsome terrorism, anti-terrorism legislation in Canada since just after 2001, of course, with the terror attacks in New York. So we have terrorism laws that prohibit funding of terrorism, give police the power to arrest people they think are about to commit a terrorist act. Those sorts of things have been on the books for quite a few years, and the reality is they're very rarely used. I was trying to look in anticipation of today's appearance for some examples of them being used by the police, and I couldn't find any. The reality is we have a criminal code which is chock full of different offenses that people are prohibited from committing. Assault, you know, planting explosives, planning attacks, those sorts of things. So this anti-terrorism law that was announced on Friday comes not into a barren landscape, but a rich, complicated regime that we have already in place that combats crime and combats terrorism. It makes some significant changes, though. Probably the most important one for politically speaking and for most people as far as fundamental rights, it criminalizes some forms of speech, which has been somewhat controversial. It makes it illegal for anyone to advocate or to promote terrorism. And one of the things, you know, when we as lawyers deal with words and the meaning of words and the devils and the details, we all would agree terrorism in terms of someone's planning attacks that are going to harm people and bombs going off and, you know, attacks on parliament, those sorts of things are horrific, dastardly acts that should be absolutely combated as strongly as we can. The challenge comes where we actually look at things like the definition of terrorism, or in this act, one of the terms they use is an act that would undermine the security of Canada. And you start looking at some of the details and it starts broadening where this might apply. And it's not going to necessarily apply exclusively to lone wolf or radicalized terrorists that are attacking Canadians and Canadian institutions with bombs and guns. It includes things like interference with the capability of government, and this is straight out of the bill, that activity that undermines the security of Canada includes interfering with the administration of justice, consular relations, economic or financial stability of Canada, interference with critical infrastructure. So these are the sorts of things where, and this isn't bombing, and the act also says terrorism is producing bombs, planning bombs, those sorts of things. So it has a broader implication. And
well, if I can just interrupt, sorry. Yeah. It raises an interesting question when you say economic, when the bill says economic and financial stability. That can include people who, very rich people, who put their money offshore and avoid taxes. That impacts the economic and financial stability of Canada, does it not?
And many would say, yes, that does. And so that's the interesting thing is when you start actually looking at some of these words and what they actually mean and what they could apply to, it's much, much, much broader than we're combating lone wolf terrorists with rifles attacking Parliament or planting bombs at the BC legislature. This is much broader in its meaning. And it significantly criminalizes actually, and this is unique in Canadian law right now as far as such a broad criminalization of speech, it makes it illegal for anyone to urge terrorism, to promote or advocate terrorism with a sentence of up to 5 years in prison. And this is critically, even when the speaker has no intention of committing a violent act or is referring to any specific act. And just a little legal lesson. Yeah. We have laws in Canada that say you can't tell someone or encourage someone to commit a crime. I think you should kill your brother. That's illegal if you're telling that person to encouraging. It's called counseling an offense, very clearly against the law in Canada. So we have a very limited area where we say you can't utter these words because you're telling people to commit a crime specifically. This act goes much further and criminalizes speech that would encourage or promote or advocate. So it's The challenge is, what some critics are saying, is that you have someone who has a blog that, for instance, is highly critical of, you know, Canadian forces, the actions in the Middle East or something else like that. And in it, it says something to the effect of, you know, the enemy should fight back and should bomb them. That, in fact, we many of us would say, well, we don't agree with that. That's, you know, I don't like that speech. Well, that's the whole thing with having free speech, is you gotta, you know, you gotta protect the stuff you don't agree with really as much as you protect the things that you don't. That could actually apply to the act. That person with that blog sitting out there on the internet right now could be potentially subject to prosecution. So that section of the criminal code, this creation of this new offense, is going to, I anticipate, be very, very carefully scrutinized by the courts and to determine if it actually is constitutional. And we have a real collision here where we start saying the government's going to stop you from saying certain things. Mm-hmm. The police are preventing you from saying things and speaking out in certain ways. And when we come, when it comes down to it, there's a real challenge there for, from a civil liberties perspective. It also, the act gives a real fundamental shift, and I think this hasn't come up in a lot of the analysis that I've seen, but I think it really fundamentally shifts the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, that's CSIS, and it turns CSIS from a passive monitoring entity, which up to this point watches, observes, collects information, analyzes it, and then if they think there's something going to happen, they turn it over to the police and say, you, the police, are law enforcement, and you go and deal with it. Go arrest the people if we think they've planted bombs or are going to attack someone. This actually gives CSIS now an active role, and it gives them the power to disrupt perceived security threats at home and abroad, including radical websites, phones, social media accounts. And so they can actually go in there and start taking a much more active role before the police had to do those sorts of things. So I'd say we'd really want to keep an eye on CSIS's budget to determine, are we now kind of creating a secondary police force in Canada? And so this is something really to keep an eye on. While I'm talking about budget, one of the there's many people concerned about violence and attacks in Canada, and that's a legitimate concern. There's lots of things we should be scared of in our lives, and this is one of the very dramatic and gets a lot of attention, a lot of media. But the reality is the police out there are not saying to the government or to anyone that I know, we need different legislation because we're hamstrung. We can't go get these people because we don't have the sorts of powers that are contained in this legislation. They're saying we need people power. We need bodies on the ground who can follow people. I mean, we know the individual who attacked Parliament in Ottawa was on the police radar, but they don't have the manpower to check in and watch people and conduct even part-time surveillance on the vast majority of individuals that they think may well be dangerous. And this law, this legislation, it isn't going to help that. And it's free.
I suspect that most people, based on what you've just told us, are unaware of the really fine details of this legislation. And I was quite astounded with a story that was in the Globe and Mail that said most Canadians are in support of tougher legislation to combat terrorism. I think this is simply, this is me speaking, I think this is simply a political move on behalf of the Harper government in order to win votes in the next election. Because people should always remember that if this legislation goes through, trying to get back those rights that we've lost or will lose as a result of this legislation will be virtually impossible.
And you raise a very good point, which is one of the interesting things about this legislation is it doesn't have what we call a sunset clause. After 2001, everyone was completely shocked, and we instituted a number of anti-terrorism measures and said, look, we're going to put these limits in and give these extra police powers, but we're going to do it for 3 years because we're really upset right now and clearly there's an imminent threat, and so we need to really ramp it up. But we don't want to just sort of permanently affect the way Canadians are going to have to live their lives. This legislation has no sunset clause, and many are also critical of it because it doesn't have any oversight provisions.
Interesting. Let's take a break, Paul. Paul Pearson is our guest. We welcome your calls. We'll take a break and we'll come right back.
Call us 250-386-1161. BC-wide, call toll-free 1-855-686-1161 or on your cell at star 1070. You're listening to The Ian Jessup Show. Rain? Sun? Snow? We get it right with an accurate forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Are you living paycheck to paycheck, losing sleep, and feeling overwhelming anxiety? Release the burden in just one session. You're invited to Live Debt-Free in 2015, a free seminar courtesy of Abacan & Associates, debt restructuring consultants. Learn 7 ways to shed your debt and get the life you've always wanted. February 26th at Perks Rec Center. Seating is limited, so register today, 995-3122 or amatteroflifeanddebt.com. Abacan & Associates will show you there's life after debt.
You've heard Mr. Sweeper Vacuum carries the powerful Canadian-made CycloVac, but did you know that for a limited time they're offering free installation plus $200 of free central vacuum product? That's right, free! So whether you're looking to purchase the CycloVac system for the first time or looking to replace your old central vacuum, the time is now. Hurry in to see the Canadian-made CycloVac today at Mr. Sweeper Vacuum in Save on Foods Plaza on Blanchard or online at MrSweeperVacuum.ca.
Welcome back to Talk Radio. Folks, today we're going to quench your thirst for savings with another incredible deal from the Prez himself, Daryl Jones.
Rick, it's the case lot sale at Save On Foods, so it's time to stock up on juicy savings. Like a case of 12, 1 liter Sunripe 100% pure apple juice for a price you just won't believe. Just $10.99.
Oh, I believe it, Daryl. I am a believer. And folks, you will be too. Join us at the case lot sale on now at Save On Foods. Talk about savings.
How Bell makes watching TV better.
Julie is the ultimate movie buff. She loves to watch her favorite movies over and over again. That's why she got Bell TV, so she can watch on-demand movies in stunning 1080p HD. Now she notices details she didn't see before, like how that extra way at the back of the room has lipstick on her teeth.
Get movies in 1080p HD, the best picture quality available on TV. Bell, watching TV just got better.
Hi, this is Daryl.
And I'm Tom from Murphy Wall Beds.
You know, it seems like everyone needs more room these days, but with the cost of renovations in real estate, it seems next to impossible to get it.
Need a home office, guest room, storage, or TV room? With Murphy Wall Beds, you can have it.
Let us show you how our innovative designs and products can let one room do it all at a fraction of the price.
Come and see what we have in store for you at Murphy Wall Beds of Victoria, 3075 Douglas Street, building quality living solutions into Victoria homes for over 25 years.
Hi, I'm Al Faraby. It's never too late to help Victoria children and families in need, no matter what the need, through CFAX Santas Anonymous. You can make that donation anytime by going to the Santas Anonymous website at CFAXSantas.com. It's easy, it's secure. And while you're there, find out more about how CFAX Santas Anonymous helps local children all year long.
Helping Victoria children and families in need, no matter what the need. Donate to CFAX Santas Anonymous now at CFAX1070.com. Engaging talk. It's the Ian Jessup Show.
Welcome back. Victoria criminal lawyer Paul Pearson is our guest, and we're talking about the new anti-terrorism legislation that was introduced by the Conservative government on Friday. Let's go to the phones and talk to Ron. Hi, Ron.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Have we learned nothing from our partners, the so-called Five Eyes Intelligence Network, Australia, New Zealand, you know, United Kingdom, the U.S., who share information? They all have a proactive parliamentary oversight or congressional oversight for its spy services. Here we have the so-called Security Intelligence Review Committee, or CIRC, originally chaired by Dr. Arthur Porter, who's in a Panamanian jail right now, awaiting extradition for fraud charges. I mean, he was appointed by Harper. The interim chairman now is Deb Gray, conservative, ex-conservative MP. Chuck Strahl was on it until he had conflict of interest because of his relationships with the oil business. It seems to me we need a parliamentary watchdog and not a conservative lapdog. And secondly, finally, Benjamin Franklin said some years ago quite wisely, he who sacrifices freedom for security deserves neither.
Yeah, very good comment. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it.
Now, Ron makes a couple of really good points, and he's dead right about oversight. And we sort of would probably, most listeners would think, well, Canada, we're sort of a more careful in our democracy. We're not like the Americans who are spying on their own people. And in fact, he's absolutely correct. The United States, Britain, France, and other allies of Canada, Australia, have robust security regimes and secret spy agencies, effectively, but they've got parliamentary oversight. So they call these agencies in and say, hey, what have you been up to? What are you doing? Justify it. Why are you taking those actions? And they can do it in a way where they have top secret panels where you can bring in police officers, members of parliament, and other experts who can meet in secret, determine if this activity is acceptable, and then take action if it's not. We don't have even a secret meeting about whether or not this stuff's acceptable in Canada. We've got nothing. And there are the new changes do anticipate in certain circumstances the security service is going to court to get a warrant, which is a much better scenario where we say, okay, you've got to go prove it to a judge to say you've got to make a case to monitor people. But in many other circumstances, one of the interesting things about the new piece of legislation is that CSIS has to go and get a warrant from court if it wants to start engaging in some of this disruptive activity. But it only has to do that if CSIS thinks that it might breach the constitutional rights of Canadians. And, of course, it doesn't take long to realize that I don't think CSIS is going to have the same sort of position on that as callers like Ron or maybe myself would have, which is you're kind of breaching our rights quite regularly if you're monitoring what we're doing and checking in.
And the question is, even if they do breach someone's rights, how would we ever know?
This is the key without any oversight. And the reality is, I want to emphasize this, this legislation isn't just targeted at quote-unquote bad guys. This legislation will affect the privacy rights, and this is people's medical records, the churches they go to, the religious organizations they're affiliated to, the charities they donate to. All of that's going to be now placed into, if this bill goes through as it is, into a giant database from which CSIS can select people, monitor people, correlate the data together, and we're going to see in total secret basically a government monitoring of anything they can get their hands on. And so it's a real loss to Canadians as far as our privacy, and that's everyone, because the legislation specifically says it's not just to combat terrorism, it's to detect it. So in order to detect it, they've got to watch everyone.
Yeah. So if this is challenged by the courts, by anyone, and it goes to court, the judge has to make a decision on whether it's constitutional or not.
Correct.
Do I have that right?
Yeah.
How long a process is that?
So that can take, it can be quite quick sometimes. I mean, sometimes you'll see these things going through in a few months. Typically, it takes a couple of years for a case to go through. The reality, though, is the people who are subject to the new offenses, for instance, the free speech limitation offenses, those will be challenged immediately. The first cases that deal with that will be challenged. So that will have a really good, full sunshine, light of day review in court. And I want to emphasize, in Canada, we don't have a situation where a judge says, well, this breaches your constitutional right, so I'm going to strike down this legislation. What the judge says is a two-step process and says, if this is unconstitutional, they then go on to analyze, is it a reasonable limit? Is there a threat out there? Is this answer to a real problem? And this is what we have to do. So we have a very conservative approach to judicial review in Canada. Many, I think, conservative thinkers would say we have activist judges who are striking down laws left, right, and center. We just do not have that sort of judicial review in Canada. But things like this CSIS monitoring of personal information and private information, it's going to be sort of hard for individuals to go and take a case to court because there's going to be nothing in court. There's nothing there. And you won't find out about it because there's no parliamentary committee. Your name's not going to show up in any official reports. You'll never be able to find out from the government what they're digging around on you. So if I wanted to challenge this legislation for myself, I'd have to show up in court empty-handed and say, well, I think they're spying on me, but I don't really know. So it makes review very, very difficult.
What about the comments of – I'm going to give you a couple of comments here. One was from Michael Vaughan of the BC Civil Liberties Association, who says an who called this legislation an unprecedented expansion of powers that will harm innocent Canadians and not increase our public safety. And also the Privacy Commissioner of Canada, Daniel Therrien, said this act would seemingly allow departments and agencies to share the personal information of all individuals, including ordinary Canadians, who may not be suspected of terrorist activities, which is what you talked about, Paul, for the purposes of detecting and identifying new security threats. It's not clear that this would be a proportional measure that respects the privacy rights of Canadians.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the challenge here is that we could be using a scalpel in this situation. You could craft a scenario where the police, if they have a concern, they could go to court or some other form of review and say, we need to go and dig up this person's medical records, their movements around Canada. And trust me, government's got lots of information on all of us. Part of your protection against quote unquote big brother concerns is that government isn't one big entity that shares it all. It's in different places. You've got your VHA records, you've got your court records, you have motor vehicle records and medical records, different records around. If someone starts collating it all together, pretty soon they know exactly what you're doing, where you're going, who you're hanging around with, and what you're saying. And in this scenario, they're going to be monitoring that, not just for, as I say, surgically, with using a scalpel, a narrow group. They're going to, the easiest way for them to do this is to monitor everyone and to just sort of do it in a very broad manner. And I want to emphasize, without oversight, without anyone watching over their shoulders.
I asked someone the other day how many people have been killed since 2001 in Canada as a result of terrorism, and they couldn't come up with an answer. But I was looking at some statistics on the weekend. On average, every 6 days in Canada, a woman is killed by her partner. And in 2011, there were 89 murders, domestic violence murders in Canada. 85% of those were women. And every night, 3,000 women and children spend the night in a shelter. So if you go back to 2001 and say, on average, 75 women were killed, or 75 people, let's not just exclude men, let's say men and women were killed. If you add that up, that's almost 1,000 people were killed by domestic violence in this country. Yeah. And so I think, which is the biggest threat, domestic violence or terrorism?
And the answer to that is, it's one needs to look at these sorts of legislative changes, not only in the shadow of those staggering and very, very upsetting figures, but in terms of the distance we are to a federal election, the distance between the Conservatives and how they want to be perceived by the electorate and the Liberals and how they want the Liberals or the NDP to be perceived. Mm-hmm. And the real answer is putting out legislation like this is actually really cheap. You write it, the government lawyers take some time to draft it, you put it out, even if no one ever uses it, it doesn't really cost anything, and they need money. The police need funding.
Paul Pierce,